Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on August 25th, 2013. This is episode 1008. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup cost, and RingCentral is just $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers and the internet and smartphones and digital doohickeys of all stripes, sizes, shapes, and colors. Yes, the show where we talk about everything with a chip in it. My phone number, if you want to call Kim and say hi, Kim's filling in for Heather this week, it is Kim Schaffer, is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, it turns out. And then outside there, you know, you could still call. You could still call. You just use Skype and it's still free. 888-827-5536. Now, what happened this week? Whoa, there's kind of a big surprise. Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, said he's going to step down in a year. Okay, he's not in a hurry, but this is a big deal. There's a lot of speculation about whether he's going on his own. Or whether the board said, hey, Steve, or maybe even Bill Gates, who's chairman of the board, say, hey, Steve, you know, you tried. You really did your best. But it's time for you to say goodbye. He's 57. I mean, he's old enough to be looking at retirement. But I guess you could reasonably say we'd have five more years, six more years, maybe seven or eight more years out of him. In a normal course of events. So it wasn't like he was pushed out, I mean, by his age. I think, though, it's not unreasonable to say, I mean, a lot of people have been saying for a long time, it's Ballmer's got to go. Because Microsoft's very successful. There's no doubt about that. But I think a little bit of it's inertia, isn't it? They owned the world for so long because of the success of Windows and Microsoft Office, chiefly. A little bit of success with Xbox, but not, you know. You know, this is a small market, this gaming market. We pay a lot of attention to it because it's interesting, it's pretty, but it's not a big market. We're talking, you know, a few million units compared to the hundreds of millions of units Windows sells. So Windows is a big deal. Office is a big deal. So you're seeing a lot of articles. Why Steve Ballmer failed. Company faces shakeup. Here's what Steve Ballmer didn't get about X, the tablet revolution, mobile phones, Windows. My friend Mary Jo Foley, who writes about Microsoft for ZDNet and hosts a show for our podcast network called Windows Weekly, interviewed Mr. Ballmer that day, the day he announced. Well, I guess it was it Friday, Thursday or Friday? And asked him what his greatest regret was, and he said, well, It's the mess up with Vista. They were headed down one road, a platform they called Longhorn, and about halfway down they said, "This is, you know what, this isn't going to work," and they retrenched and rewrote from scratch. But that's something that the outside world really wasn't aware of. I mean, you know, we who cover it were. It delayed Vista a bit, a lot. But they had announced all this new cool stuff that they weren't able to do. But it really wasn't, you know, the guy sitting or the gal sitting in the office using Windows machines didn't really go, oh, wow, Microsoft blew it. No, that's reserved for things like calling the iPhone a failure, saying nobody will buy this. It's too expensive. Who wants a touchscreen? Ballmer said that in 2007. And it wasn't until 3 years later that Microsoft finally realized their Windows Mobile platform wasn't going anywhere because everybody's buying iPhones and, worse, bringing them to the office. A whole new trend, BYOD, was named because of that. Bring your own device. And it changed, really, how a business is even thought about computing. It was a great little stealth device for Apple. So Microsoft quickly did an about-face. They're famous for this. And released Windows Phone, which is, you know, pretty darn good. It's just 3 years late.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough business to be 3 years behind in, isn't it? Especially with Android and iPhone battling it out at the top. You know, Windows 8, it's hard to get real excited about that either, you know? Microsoft reasonably said, oh, we're in trouble here with tablets and mobile is eating our lunch. People aren't going to be using PCs much anymore. They were right about that. Maybe we better get into this mobile sphere, but they couldn't quite. They tried really hard to just say, we're going to change everything. We're all in. They couldn't quite let go of the desktop. And then that, as a result, and David Pogue writing in the, admittedly an Apple fanboy, but writing in the New York Times, pointed out how confusing it is for people to have two different browsers. He calls the Metro interface Tile World. He says you have a Tile World browser and a Windows browser. You have Tile World settings and Windows settings. It's very confusing. He's right. I agree. You can't, and of course, I guess the worst from the point of view of the stock market is he took a company that was worth, I think, $600 million when he started as CEO and shrank it to $270 million. That's not good. You lose $300 million in value. That's not good. Might be why the stock market jumped 7%. When they heard it. You're right. TX Jeb in the chat room says, speaking of blunders, Leo's still calling it Metro. Yeah, I am. You know why? Because it is. We have no other name for it. A couple of big blunders. Microsoft called their new user interface Metro until a German company sued them, and they had to turn about face. Oh, no, it's not Metro. This is what they call it, the modern UI. Yeah, that'll work. I think for clarity's sake, we got to have a name for it. Tile World or Metro, you choose. Same thing just happened with SkyDrive, Microsoft's cloud. I think you could blame the lower downs for this, but ultimately the buck stops at the top, doesn't it? Steve Ballmer, the CEO. They named and put a lot of money into this brand SkyDrive till the British broadcasting company Sky said, you can't use Sky. Now Microsoft has to rename SkyDrive. These are not... In any one of these is a world ender, but in aggregate, it looks like a company that's not very well run. William Becker said, Ballmer didn't shrink Microsoft. The Times shrank Microsoft, and that's true. You can't deny it. And in fact, all of this, you could say, isn't Steve's fault. It's just the world moves on, and in technology, that's what happens. It happens to every company. It happened to IBM. IBM got a new CEO. Named Palmisano, who came in and said, you know what? This PC market's dying. We're going to get into services. And this was a long time ago. They sold the laptop division ThinkPad to the Chinese, to Lenovo. They stopped making mainframes and minis and microcomputers. They said, we're a services company. And they've survived, much shrunk. IBM is much shrunk. Looks like Microsoft's going to make the same transition, but you need a guy to do it. And that's really the bottom line. That's what Steve Ballmer said. He said, we need somebody who can sit in here and manage the long-term transition. Okay. Lost $900 million in the last quarter on the Surface tablet, RT. That probably was a straw that broke the camel's back, right? The board said, geez, Steve, you know, a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you've lost some real money. We got to do something. So Microsoft's not out of business by any means, but it will be a new, smaller Microsoft. And, you know, this is what happens. The tech industry is a fast-moving business. It's much faster than even the auto industry or any other industry in the United States. Things happen quickly. Companies rise and fall in a matter of years instead of a matter of decades or even centuries. You know, Ford's been around for over 100 years. It's hard to imagine a computer company that would last even 50. IBM's 50, more than 50. but it's not the same company, is it? And Microsoft probably won't be the same company going forward. And you know what? Neither will Apple or Google or any or Facebook or any of these other companies. That's the excitement of it. There's always a new opportunities. So good luck, Steve. We'll miss you. He was a credit character. But I think it is time for new blood at Microsoft. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take this job and shove it. The Steve Ballmer song. He's a young man. He'll be. They say he's going to take as long as a year to wind this thing up. Till they're doing a starting the executive search to replace him at the Microsoft now. He'll be 58 when he walks out the door. As a young man, what do you think he's going to do? Steve, you want to do a radio show? He should. He's good. He's got style. He's got pizzazz. He's got something. All right, Kim, who should I start the show with today? Who do you like?
You know, I think Steve from Hermosa Beach, he wants you to play the devil's advocate and good. Maybe convince him to not get a new laptop.
Oh, yeah, I'm really good at stopping people from spending money. Not. Hey, Steve, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
So did Heather characterize this properly? You're trying to get me to get you not to spend money?
She absolutely did. And what's funny is last week you told a guy not to, you know, get the extended warranty, and I just bought one on mine. Let me give you the background. I have a Lenovo T510 right now. It's been an awesome machine. It's getting slow. And I'm thinking of replacing it with a W530, probably the third processor down from the top. I'll blow it out with 32 gigs of RAM and probably dual SSD drive.
I'm going to stop you on the RAM, definitely. What do you do?
I'm a consultant. I'm on the road a fair amount, and I have Dragon, naturally speaking, and I want to use it more.
Yeah, certainly Dragon benefits from RAM. The more of the vocabulary you can keep in RAM, the better. But 32 gigs is an awful lot, I think.
Well, I can start with – the thing is, I can start with 16 gigs, but my thought was buy it all at once. That way, you know, all four chips are the same thing, and it's only $60 a slot. It's only $60 for each 8 gigs.
Right.
So the clients that I typically work for use almost all Microsoft programs, so I need to stick with something Microsoft. And I like redundancy. I want a machine that screams. I have a tablet as a backup for email when I'm on the road, when I travel. But
I'm not going to talk you out of it. It's time for a new one. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, unless you really want me to.
I really don't, but I'm wondering if there's a better alternative because
I like Lenovo. I think you're right to stick with Lenovo if they're the best. Windows laptops are among the best anyway. You're getting Windows 8?
Never.
All right.
No, because here's the irony. Again, client software is all Microsoft-based. I upgraded to IE10, and two of the main programs won't run.
That's nice, isn't it? Well, that's not, you know, I mean, that'll get better. But
you're right.
So now these are workstations, these Ws. That's what the W stands for,
that's
which means
workstation
they're
processor.
Desktop replacement, basically.
Yes.
So battery life doesn't matter to you.
No, and I have the slice. Right now, with my T510, I get 7 hours with the slice and even my battery that's 3.5 years old.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that using the slice on the new one with the 9-cell, I'll get somewhere around 12 hours. And if I go
You're
to
SSD, kidding me. Oh, well, that's great. All right.
Well, and that's not even with SSD drives. I'll probably go with dual SSD drives. Is that dumb?
I think one is enough.
No, I was going to do one as a boot, one as data.
What I would do is one SSD and one spinning drive for data, because the SSDs, the advantage, of course, is they're very fast, particularly on reads, but they're also more expensive per gigabyte. And if you want to have a lot of data storage, you've got two slots in there. That's why they do it. The SSD, you put Windows and your apps on it, you're never going to fill more than 128 gigs. And then, so you can get a relatively small SSD drive and then get a terabyte of storage in the second drive. And you'll get all the speed benefit, really. I mean, the speed benefit's almost entirely in booting and launching applications.
Okay. Well, the reason I was thinking of dual, I did a speed test with someone who's got a brand new T530, and the standard drive in the T530 boots faster than my T510.
Oh, yeah, it should, yeah.
With an SSD.
Yeah. No, that's the beauty of an SSD, but that's for booting. You don't need two drives to boot.
Right, right.
And I think that's a good compromise. You get a lot of storage. You don't sacrifice storage, but you get all the speed you want.
Okay.
So one SSD, one spinning drive. What happens with memory, and you can look at a graph, is your biggest jump is from maybe 4 to 8 gigabytes in terms of performance, depending on what you're doing, right? And if you have Photoshop or, you know, large files like that, maybe more is better, but you're not. Yeah. Then from 8 to 16, there's a slight, you know, it shallows out quite a bit. And from 16 to 32... I mean, yeah, it's only $120 more, but it's, maybe 1% difference in speed. You know, I guess if you feel like it, RAM is cheap. Certainly wouldn't hurt to have more RAM.
Right.
I think a single SSD, a single spinning drive, I think your processor choices are good. You're buying an i7 because it's a workstation computer, no matter what. It's just a matter of which i7. I would make sure you're getting fourth generation. I don't know if they're offering the Haswells yet or not. If they're not, that might be a reason to wait a bit. They will have Haswell soon, if not.
Okay.
Haswell is faster, more efficient, better battery life. You might not even need the slice with a Haswell. You get about 50% improvement in battery life.
This says it's an i7-3740QM. I'm guessing QM is a quad, but 6 megs of cache up to 3.7 gigahertz.
Yeah. I like, you know, the biggest difference in these is how much L2 cache they have. So,
right.
So having a quad core with 6 megabytes of cache is what makes a difference.
Now,
this is, by the way, this is a third. This is not the Haswell. This is third generation.
Okay. Is 8 megs of cache worth $200 more?
Yeah, cache is very expensive.
Right.
I don't know if going from 6 to 8 makes a big difference. I think the biggest difference would be to get the Haswell chip, especially because the motherboard graphics are improved considerably as well.
Okay. Well, I have an in. I can find out about the Haswell.
I'm sure Lenovo is, at the moment, just working on it. I mean, the Haswell's out. I believe that part is out for that thing, so it won't be long before that happens.
And
the other thing
to
look at with SSD is what the bus is. You know, one thing Apple's doing that's really smart in its Mac Pro, of course, this is a spare-no-expense computer, is instead of putting the SSD, the solid-state, very fast drive, on the SATA bus, which will slow it down, even SATA 3 will slow it down, they're putting it on PCI Express. And I've noticed that's a huge difference in terms of using the full bandwidth of the SSD. I don't know if any laptop is doing that yet, PCI okay. Express on a laptop. But that would be another thing to look for. You're right. You know, the processor speed at this point is not the gating factor on overall speed of a laptop. It's I.O., the I.O. bus, reading and writing to the hard drive particularly. That makes a big difference.
What about the graphics memory? Because that's the only thing that's messed up on my T510 now is open enough windows in Internet Explorer and the graphics just blows up. You got to reboot.
Right. And that's one of the reasons I think Haswell might be an improvement for you.
But for $250 more, I can get 2 gigs of graphics memory instead of one. But that's a lot of money.
Yeah, more graphics memory is not the solution.
It's not.
I don't think so.
Okay, so wait for the Haswell.
If you can wait for the Haswell and see if they're going to do a PCIe SSD in that thing ever. If they are, if you've got an in, ask them. MacBook Air has PCIe, and it's the fastest booting machine I've ever seen in my life. It's amazing. Sounds like a nice machine. You're going to enjoy it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Tech Guy podcast has sponsors, and I want to really thank our folks at Ring Central. They sponsor the podcast, and they also sponsor our phone system. we actually had to figure out when we built this beautiful studio how we were going to get phones on everybody's desk. In the past, when I was just me and a few other people, we had everybody use their cell phones, and we even said, well, you know, we'll reimburse you if it costs a lot. Now we actually have an office with like 25, 30 people in here. And so we had to get a phone system. And I didn't want to really go to the phone company, get a PBX in the basement. I'd had experience with that. It's expensive, complicated. And mostly I wanted the flexibility that a digital system could provide. And that's why we went with Ring Central. I have to credit Russell Tammany, our IT guy. He's a contract IT guy. He works at Exponentia. And he said, try RingCentral. So we did. So the high idea of Ring Central is it's in the cloud. So there's no PBX in the basement. We get so much more functionality. It's so less, much less expensive. There's no startup cost, no hardware to install, nothing to maintain, completely customizable. Our producers get their voicemail and their email. There's a Ring Central app for Android and iPhone, which means that you can place calls from your cell phone, and it looks like it's coming from our 800 number. You can get your messages there, fax messages, right? You get faxes. You can send faxes. They have a new feature, Business SMS, which is great. You can send text messages to customers, to colleagues, to some of our guests from our business phone number using your smartphone. You don't use your personal number. It looks like it's coming from 800, whatever, twit. Ring Central's pricing is very affordable. Starts as low as $20 a month per user. You just give them a phone, they plug it in, and you're good to go. I love it. You can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And we've got a kind of a special offer just for podcast listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second Ring Central phone up free, up to 20 phones. That's going to save you a lot of money. So here's a number we've got just for Tech Guy listeners, 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980, or go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT, 1 month free, plus when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Ring Central, we love it! Alan in Baton Rouge. Hello, Alan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing today, Leo?
I am well.
First, I just wanted to say thank you for everything you do at Twit. I'm a huge fan.
Oh, thank you. That's our podcast network. See, I got, you know, I was working 6 whole hours a week, and if I had been a smart fella, I would have just sat back, enjoyed the rest of the time. But no, I said, well, I got a few extra hours in the day. Why don't I do this podcast network? And so now I do. Now I do 13 shows a week. But hey, that's life.
Well, those of us that watch are really happy you chose to do it.
I'm thrilled. Are you kidding? I'm very lucky. You know, I'd be nuts to look a gift horse in the mouth. What can I do for you?
So anyway, my question is, right now I have a huge iTunes library. I've got about 135 gigs and growing of music.
You didn't buy all that, did you?
Well, some of it.
Yeah, you bought a good portion of it.
Right, I bought a good portion of it. So anyway, my question is, I've got my GS3 and I'm using Google Play Music as the backup. But I'm getting to the point where I'm about to run out of space. And so I just don't know where to go from here because I don't have an iDevice. So
yeah, so the first step is to pay the $25, use iTunes Match, and replace anything that's still copy protected or lower than 256-bit AAC with an unprotected 256-bit AAC version. Because that's a great thing to do. And you can do it by turning on Match, letting it match everything. Then, and this is a little scary, back up before you do this, deleting everything that was matched. Not stuff that wasn't matched, but everything that was matched. And then re-download all of that. That'll take a little while. But now you've got the best possible copies. Now, one thing I should let you know, your email address is now a part of that file. And that's they do that so the music industry says, hey, well, if he pirates it, at least we could figure out who it was, the source of that. So just, it's not a good thing now to give away your music once you do that. But hey, if you're not going to do that, this is a great way to upgrade everything in your library. Now you've got an unprotected library you can do anything you want with, including, and I do this, uploading the first 25,000 songs to Google Music. That's free. But it's limited to 25,000 songs. With the amount of data you have, I bet you have more than that.
Right, I do. Or if I don't, I'm getting there because I'm getting new songs every week.
Yeah. I love Google Music because once I've uploaded it to there, they do the same thing. They match and all that stuff. Then it's available on all my devices except, ironically, on my iOS stuff, on iPhone and iPad, because there's no Google Music app yet. The Google says there will be. There's a third-party app. It's fine, but it's not as good as the stuff. And so I do the same thing. Now, that stuff is effectively backed up twice, once by iTunes on iTunes Match and once by Google, up to the first 25,000 songs.
Right. So basically, what I should do then, like you said, is just go ahead and get iTunes Match. And
I think it's worth $25. By the way, you pay once to do this. You don't have to keep paying next year and the year after.
Right, so that's good.
And I guess you could have a second Google account. This is complicated. Bert's saying, well, what is if he creates another Google account? Yeah, it's 25,000 songs per account. But then you got to segment your files and all of that. I don't know if that's a really great way to do them.
Right, yeah, and that's exactly what I'm a little bit confused by. I don't really want to have a whole bunch of files that I'm not really sure where they are because I've got so many.
Well, I mean, the pack rat effect has kicked in, my friend. You are now officially a hoarder. Because nobody, I mean, how many years would it take you to listen to all your music? That's a lot.
It would take me, according to iTunes, it would take me 42 and a half days for 24 hours straight.
Well, that's not that much. I could see using all of that. That's the pack. Now, music's funny because you may not listen to a song, but in 5 years want to say, oh, I love that. Let me listen to that album again. So there is reason. There are reasons to save it, especially since it's digital. I'd get some external drives, you know, and back everything up. You know, you can fit that on a single terabyte drive.
Oh sure, yeah. As a matter of fact, I've got an external drive, but it's just the thought of God. What if the drive goes down?
Well, get two,
Get
two or three, and move one to work or your mom's or whatever. Get them off site. So if anything goes bad, then you've got something, right? You know, there are some interesting solutions. I'm trying out one from the folks at Drobo called the Transporter that's kind of intriguing. You buy a little terabyte drive, and it basically is your own personal Dropbox. So you connect it to your network. And Dropbox is expensive, right? So this is you mm-hmm. buy it. There's no monthly fee. There's no charge for this once you buy the device. $200 for I think half a terabyte. $300 for a terabyte. And you can get more than that even, or you can buy your own little laptop drive and put it in there. And then it works on Mac and PC just like Dropbox. So that's kind of cool too. That now gives you as much as 2 terabytes of cloud-based storage.
I think I may give that a shot. I saw you open that up yesterday, and it looks really interesting.
Yeah, I'm very – well, you know, I'm reviewing it, so I can't say right now whether it's a recommend or not, but it's an interesting idea, yeah. The Drobo guys came by, and Mark Fuccio and company, and dropped this off. It works right now with Windows or Mac. They say they're going to have port mobile versions of their software soon. And it works looks just like Dropbox. I mean, as far as you can tell, it's like Dropbox. You can sync it to any machine. You own the storage, so you can have as much as you want. It's on your network. Now, if your house burns down, that's bad if you're not syncing it, but you could sync it somewhere else. Right?
Sure.
So, I think that's another way to think about it. The one thing I don't recommend, we talk a lot about Carbonite. If you're backing up that much data, an online backup solution, whether it's Carbonite or Jungle Disk or Amazon or whatever, is not going to be as sensible because it just takes so long. Something like this, it's in your network. You can get it over there pretty quickly using gigabit Ethernet. There are also network-attached storages. Somebody in the chat room saying, what about Synology? Yes, Synology is great, NAG. That's an excellent solution as well. I use that. I use ReadyNAS. See, these are boxes with lots of storage, lots of space. You can put your stuff on there. You can even do it via USB for quick, you know, the first time, quick getting all of that over there. And then it makes it available throughout the house. I like this Transporter because it also makes it available as a cloud solution. You can do that with Synology and others, but it's a little trickier. Not quite as straightforward. So the key is, yes, back it up. You've invested a lot of time and money probably in this music collection. It's okay to be a digital hoarder. It's not like it's blocking your hallway, but it does add to the complexity of backing it up and storing it and all of that. The good news is music is not as big as things like video. It's not like the guy. Didn't we have a guy call who had hundreds, thousands of video cassettes, VHS cassettes? I was trying to figure out what to do with that. You know, there are a lot of ways to do this. This is a very common question. 8888, Ask Leo is the phone number if you have a question about this kind of stuff. I'd love to hear from you. Moving on. Thanks for the call. Laissez les bon temps rouler, Alan. Herbert, Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Herbert.
How you doing, Neil?
I am very well. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I appreciate taking the call. I have a 36-inch Sony TV that finally gave up the ghost after 20 years.
Oh, it's my favorite thing. I'm going to help you buy a new TV. We have to take a break, but when we come back, let's go shopping. What do you say?
That's a good deal for me.
Leo Laporte. Yeah, for me too. The tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Herbert's on the line from Klamath Falls. We're going to buy Herbert a TV. His 30-inch Sony died. Finally.
20 years.
You know, I have a picture somewhere on my Flickr. I was walking down the street a couple of months ago, and there was a Sony Vega, you know, those WEGA. They used to be like top-of-the-line TVs in a box on the ground. 32-inch, said free. Works great. Nobody wants it anymore.
Yeah.
Thousands of dollars when it was new.
Yeah, I know. That's what they paid, thousands of dollars.
Hey, you got a lot out of it. Now it's time for an HD TV.
Yes, sir. My budget is about less than $700.
Okay.
My distance as far as hanging on the wall or on the stand, I'm kind of need a little bit of help with.
If you go to the Dolby folks, they will tell you you need a ginormous TV even if you're only 10 feet away. And you're going to, especially since you're used to a 32-incher, you're going to say, what are they, a 60-inch TV? That's crazy talk. But it is true. You should get the biggest you can afford because it gives you more of a cinematic experience, right? Here's some other things to think of. Sound. Most of these TVs have built-in sound. But you're going to want a surround sound. For best results, you're going to want a surround sound system, at least a sound bar, ideally a 5.1 speaker system, because it really makes a big difference. Sound is as important as picture when it comes to this stuff. The good news is $700, you're fine. You know, you can get the sound later. Save up and get the sound next year. I'm going to suggest you look at a company called Vizio, V-I-Z-I-O. You see them at the big box stores.
Right.
They're not a first-tier player like the big ones, Sony, Panasonic, LG, Sharp, but they're second-tier, but they're value, and they're very good value. And I have a number of Vizio TVs, and I think they're really excellent. And you'll get more TV for your buck. For $700, you should at least be able to get a 50-inch Vizio. You're going to be looking for an LED backlit LCD. Sometimes they just call it an LED TV.
Okay.
And Vizio has decent smart TV stuff and 3D and all that, but you know, you don't need any of that. You just want the best panel you can get for $700, the best quality. If you were in a higher price range, you would look at plasma probably. I think plasma's better, but it does cost a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think LED LCDs are just great. In fact, for your first high-def TV, it's great to go because these things make your eye pop. They make your eye pop. In fact, the first thing you want to do is go into the settings on that and turn off the dynamic or showroom mode because they're on a very bright mode that makes everybody go, ooh, but it's not realistic. You want to put it in the movie mode or the natural mode. And then just enjoy it. And then a few months from now, when you've saved up more, I would look at what's called an HTIB or home theater in a box. It's an amplifier, sometimes with a DVD player, as well as a 5.1 surround sound system.
Okay.
And they're not hugely expensive. In fact, there's some really good choices around the $300 to $400 range.
Okay, great. Appreciate that.
Hey, enjoy. I'm telling you, you don't know. You're going to just be so happy. The only thing now is your old standard definition stuff is going to look terrible. The stuff that used to look good on that 32-inch isn't because it's going to be blown up. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be crisper. You're going to see all the flaws. I Love Lucy looks awful. So just be aware of that. A lot of people say, "What my normal TV now doesn't look any good." Yeah. Now you have to go out and get an HD subscription for your cable or satellite provider, all of this stuff, because the bad news about an HD TV is it shows all the defects. So if you don't upgrade your satellite or cable, If you don't, you know, if you still use a VCR, you're gonna want to go out and get a Blu-ray player. You can actually, if you somebody's saying in the right resolution, Lucy looks good. That's true. You could shrink it down to the right size, then it would look fine. But there'd be these big black bars around it. You're gonna love it. It's such an upgrade. It really makes a huge difference. It changes your experience of television. I think Vizio has a very compelling value option. Somebody in the chat room saying, well, you can get a Panasonic 50-inch plasma for $700 at Costco. Don't recommend it. It'll be stripped down. You get more bang for your... You can find cheap plasmas, but don't. Get the Vizio for that price. Kyle, Sparta, Michigan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, Leo. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
So, I hope you could help today, but in fact, I'm sure you could help. I have currently, I'm really trying to future-proof here because I am going into my senior year of high school, and I kind of want to get a jump on college.
Yeah, so this is going to, this is smart. You're thinking ahead. This is going to be my college purchase, too.
Yes. I'm looking for I probably can't afford, I don't even know if they make them solid-state drive, external drives, but right now.
Well, they do. I wouldn't buy them, but they do make them. What do you want external storage you're looking for?
Yeah, and I just need to know if you would suggest a terabyte drive, and then because I can't back up to the cloud, and that's my main problem. Right. Otherwise, I would.
If you have hundreds of gigabytes, it's not sensible to back up to the cloud because it relies on your internet bandwidth. Now, when you go to college, and I did this for Henry, I would have a cloud backup solution, but just put your papers in there. Don't put. You know, Henry's got hundreds of songs and videos. Don't back those up to the cloud because there's not enough time, right? It has to use your upstream bandwidth. But for important stuff like his schoolwork, I put a folder on his desktop. I said, that's your schoolwork. That's getting backed up. So make sure you put everything in there. You know, so that's cloud storage. You're right. The most economical for a lot of data is local. Get a USB drive. Do you have USB 3 on your computer?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay. So get Western Digital. You go to the big box store, you get a terabyte Western Digital drive for $65. Something like that.
Right.
Cheap.
And the only other real question I had is with the, because I'm also at the, not right now, but the end of next summer, so this might be a little bad of a question, but I need a new laptop, especially for college. And
good news to wait. If you can survive a year with what you got, survive your senior year with what you got, wait, because there'll be, you know, all new stuff.
Right.
So wait if you can. If you're going to buy today, make sure, and I always say this now, get that fourth generation Haswell, the Intel fourth generation Haswell chip. An i5 is plenty. You're going to have your external drive. That's beautiful because you can take it with you. If that's the case, your new laptop will have USB 3. So get one that's USB 3 compatible. It'll work with all versions of USB. But USB 3 is a lot faster. You know, get the best screen and keyboard you can because you're going to be staring at it a lot and typing a lot of papers.
Right. It'll cost you for 4 years.
Yeah, so. And I like Light. I really like the Ultrabooks. I think Light is a very good choice. Henry went to... he's going to the University of Colorado. Started on Thursday. He brought a MacBook Air with him because Light is, I think, great. But it's funny. He didn't bring – I bought him as a graduation present a nice camera, and he didn't bring it with him. He said, I don't want to scope out the security before I bring – I love my camera too much. And he's right. You know, he's right. I might have to bring a safe, too. Leo Laporte. Hey, good luck in your senior year, Kyle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, and coming up in just about 33 and a third after the hour, digital photography, too, with Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. My phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO, if you've got a question. Or you can, you know, it could be just like, hey, I got an idea. What about this, Leo? I've got a solution for caller Joey, or whatever, you know, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere inside the U.S. or Canada. Outside the U.S. or Canada, you can just use Skype and call that same number. It shouldn't cost you anything. 888-827-5536. Let's go on with the show. Next, we've got Ed in Antelope Valley. Hi, Ed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
Yeah, hey, thank you for educating. This is my education time in the morning.
I'm glad to educate you.
Hey, listen, right now my eyes are not working right, so I have Motorola V50, I think it is, or V500, whatever the number is. So I use my fingers to any number that I need to go to that I remember. I'm trying to find out if the new Motorola is it voice activated as far as the address book is concerned.
Yes, it is. So if you want to send a text, you're talking about the Moto X, probably.
Right.
Although this is true of the Droids as well. If you want to, actually, in any Android phone, if you want to call someone, you say, call Ed, and it'll dial the number. You can text Ed. You can. There's a lot of stuff you can do. You're using effectively the Google Now technology. Which can do things also like remind me when I get to the grocery store to buy milk. And then it'll actually remind you when you get – it has geographic locations. And when you have to name the grocery store. You can't just say the grocery store. When I get to Petaluma Market, in my case, or when I get to Safeway, remind me to buy milk. And then when you walk in the door, your phone will go bidididip and say, hey, don't forget to buy milk.
Okay. Well, what about if – what I'm thinking of, I have – for instance – you know, from A to Z, it has names and numbers in there. But if I don't remember where the person is or what the number, you know, is there any way to access A or B? So what's in A?
Well, you'll have to do that not by your voice. You'll have to do that by hand. You can't say, hey, tell me all the numbers that begin with A. It doesn't do that yet, I'm sorry to say.
But I can do it by
by hand. It's got a very handy little search function. That you scroll down and it'll show the letters A, B, C, D as you're scrolling down. You can go all the way down to the letter D and very quickly find what you're looking for.
Okay. Well, the problem is I'm not able to see.
You're blind. That's a different matter entirely. Yeah. I don't know. Android phones do have a voiceover feature, and I would imagine I'm going to have to ask a blind listener to call us who has some experience with their voiceover technology. I would imagine that's exactly what it would do, which is tell you A, B in a robotic voice. Do you use JAWS or some other screen reader?
Okay.
Do you use JAWS?
I think the V50 it is, that Motorola.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're used, do you use a computer?
Not yet.
No, you don't. Okay. Yes, it seems to be the same issue with a computer. You get these voiceover technologies, and it reads you what's on the screen. It's slower, of course, but it's actually kind of amazing. I've seen blind users do everything a sighted user can do on a computer. And both the iPhone and Android phones have very good accessibility features now. I don't have a direct experience with it, but I'm told by... we have, obviously, as most radio shows do, quite a few blind listeners, and I'm told that it's quite good. If somebody wants to call and let us know, that would be very, very helpful. Thanks, Ed. Nettie, Huntington Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Nettie.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Thank you. First, I want to say I'll take the crappy seat any day.
we were talking on the behind the scenes. We have a video going all the time about how people are always welcome. It's an open studio. People are always welcome to come visit. But it's nice to let us know ahead of time if you email tickets@twit.tv because we have some good seats in the studio here, but also there's one bad seat behind my iMac, and I have to just peer over at you every once in a while to make sure you're not sleeping. So you can have that seat. I'll just make sure you don't fall asleep back there.
I'll take the grabby. Anyway, my ex-husband got me a Toshiba little laptop, and I love it. I wanted to get Skype so I can see my son who's in Philadelphia. I have no clue how to do it. So together during our lunch, my girlfriend, you know, we put our heads together. She goes, okay, now sign here. And I did it, and then I came home. And I go, I can't wait. I got in there, and right away, Java went, blink, blink, you have not updated. And I tried to put the little X to give it back.
So a couple of things. First of all, you don't need Java for Skype. In fact, you don't need Java for almost anything. So It's true that Java needs to be kept update because it's a very buggy program that can cause problems, not with crashing so much as with bad guys getting into your computer. So do update Java, but that's not for Skype. That's just as a coincidence.
Yeah.
Skype does not need Java, so I would uninstall Java if I were you, unless you know you need it. Get rid of it. You don't want it. Java really is a terrible, terrible thing to have on your computer because the company that owns it, Oracle, does not do a very good job of keeping it up to date. And there are lots of, you know, it was designed to be secure and safe, and it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Sad to say. Yeah. So my suggestion, unless you know, sometimes you need Java for, like there's some online games that you need Java for. You need Java if you play Minecraft. Do you play Minecraft, Nettie?
Nope.
Oh, I didn't think so. maybe your son did and he put it on your computer. So you don't normally need Java. I would uninstall it. You know how to uninstall programs. You go to your start menu, programs and features. It's in the accessories, programs and features. You run that little, control panel. Run that little control panel, programs and features, and you'll see a list of all the programs installed. Go down and look for Java runtime. Click that and uninstall it. Get rid of it. And then you won't need to. Then you won't need the updates. The other reason I don't like Java is because Oracle, this horrible company, when you install Java now, tries to install other stuff on your system that you don't want.
Yeah, it keeps on linking to something else. And how long does it take to update, though? Because when I said okay, because my girlfriend goes, oh, it's not a big deal, just say yes and it'll go away. I said yes, and it took all night long putting files. Who knows what was going on in there? And then I go, that should be finished by now. And no, it kept going, bite, 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 and I'm trying to get out of it. And,
oh, this is not good. I'm afraid of what's going on, Nettie.
I know.
Hey, when your very nice ex-husband gave you that computer, did it come with any disks for...
No, bless his heart. He's already went dead in February. He passed. So.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. But the computer didn't have any disks with it?
No, it probably did, but
you
we
didn't
had
get them.
Stuff with it. You know.
Yeah, because the disks that come with it would allow you to restart and reformat it.
Could I get a disk? Maybe I can go to one of those.
Who made the computer?
Toshiba.
You can call Toshiba and say, tell them you need to tell them the model. It'll be written on the bottom. Tell them the model and say, I need to get the recovery disks because I lost them. And they charge you, usually will charge you a nominal fee, like $15-$20 for the recovery discs.
Oh, my goodness. That's good. I'm so glad.
Having those would be nice because then what you could do is get your data off. Is there anything on the computer you need?
No, nothing really. Yeah. I don't even use it. Once in a while, maybe once a month, I'll go in there to look at everybody what they're doing on Facebook. And I laugh and turn it off. That's all I do.
So, yeah, I mean, I would love you. Yeah, the other thing you could do is you could go to a computer store and they could possibly help you. I'm a little worried about what's going on in that system. I'd like you to, kind of format it and restart. But Skype will be great. You're going to love Skype. It's free. You can call another computer for free. So it's worth getting it going. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. moving on, Sam in San Diego. You're next, Leo Laporte here. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how you doing, my man, Leo?
I'm well. How are you, Sam?
I'm fantastic and look great right here. I'll watch you right now.
Oh, wow. You must be watching some other channel if you think I look great, but that's okay. Continue to be deluded.
You're one of my favorites on the weekend, I tell you.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, look, I got a quick question for you, and I'm contemplating two choices on a TV set, 50-inch plasma Panasonic, going for a pretty goddamn good price, but it's a 720 pixel, 600 hertz.
Yeah, that's why it's going for a good price. It's old.
Yes.
720p is old.
Gotcha. So, and there's another one, a couple hundred dollars more by Vizio.
Yeah, that's why. A guy called me, and somebody in the chat room said, you can get a Panasonic for that price, because the guy had $700 or $800
right,
to spend.
Right.
And I said, I would still get the Vizio. You're going to get more bang for your buck, and this is a perfect example. Don't get a TV these days. It's not 1080p.
Gotcha.
Because I have an old 720p. It's fine, but it's not full high def. High def... You know, 720p is technically high definition, but it's old. It's an old standard, and I would suggest 1080p.
Well, you're the guy to talk to, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, get the Vizio. You'll be happy. There's, if they're selling a 720p Panasonic, that's a few years. That's got to be a few years old.
I would say so myself. Yeah. That was my first thought about it, too, there.
I do recommend Panasonic plasmas. It's the my good TV, you know, the one I show guests.
I heard about you speaking about that in the past.
That's a Panasonic plasma, and I like it. It's the Viera. I can't remember if it's a VT or a GT, or they have several levels.
Okay.
But those are excellent. Really, really good. But they're expensive. They're $2,000 or $3,000. So in that price point, get the Vizio. You'll be happier.
Well, Leo, thank you very much. Enjoy the weekend, pal.
Thanks. You too. Brad, Ontario, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ontario, Canada, Ontario, California.
Ontario, Canada.
Awesome. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Leo. I just wanted to ask you one or two quick questions.
Okay.
I've tried Handbrake. I've tried many different softwares for ripping DVDs to put on my computer, and none of them seem to work.
So are these Blu-ray or regular DVDs?
Regular DVD.
So you got a movie, you got, Ferris Bueller's Day Off hanging around, and you want to put it on the computer so you don't have to stick the disc in every time.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite movies.
Oh, yeah. So it is. It's a great movie. I like it when he's trying to pretend he's sick, so he holds the thermometer up to the light bulb.
Yeah.
So good trick. Try that on your folks. So Handbrake will work, but it needs an additional program called VLC.
Okay.
So the folks who do Handbrake got scared by the Motion Picture Alliance of America.
Okay.
Those folks down south of the 49th parallel, they're very mean. And they're all worried about copyright and about copyright. You're not going to steal a movie, right? You're just going to copy it so you don't have to put the disc in. But you have the disc. You bought the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not telling you how to pirate anything, but in order to take the date off the disc is copy protected. And the folks at Handbrake used to have technology that would remove the copy protection in the software, but they got scared. They're in France. They're still scared. So they said, well, we are going to take it out of the program. However, you could still use this other thing made by another French company called Videoland Client, VLC. You can get it at videoland.org. It is a DVD player. And as a DVD player, it has to be able to unencrypt the DVD, right? You can't play something if it's all scrambled up. So it has the key. So what happens is VLC, this all is done automatically. If you have VLC installed with Handbrake, it'll do it automatically. VLC starts the movie, gets the key, passes it along to Handbrake. Handbrake says, merci bien. And then it starts to go and turns it into a file. So even when you install Handbrake these days, it says if you want to rip DVDs, you'll need to have VLC too. The two of them together is actually a great combination, and it's all free. But let's be good, Brad. Let's not steal friends' DVDs and that kind of thing. You know, this is why the Motion Picture Association of America is so up in arms. They feel like it's costing jobs. I was in a movie the other day and it said, 52,000 people got jobs because of this movie. They're really afraid of pirates. I don't think they should be. I think that's a mistaken point of view. And I think treating people who spent $9.50 to see a movie as thieves, potential thieves, is really a mistake. I hate when they run an ad in front of a movie I just paid big bucks to see in a movie theater saying, don't steal this movie. I'm not stealing it. I just bought it. I paid a lot of money for it. Nobody's saying the movie industry ain't raking it in. So, somebody worked hard on that movie, so don't steal it. But I think it's completely legitimate to make a copy of a movie for your own purposes, to back it up for archival purposes, or to put it on an iPad or a portable player. Just make sure you bought the DVD, you own it. Don't give it to friends, that kind of thing. 8888 Ask Leo. Thank you, Brad. Appreciate the call. Taylor, Corona, California. Hi, Taylor.
Hey. I'd like to leave a comment about the departure of Steve Ballmer.
CEO of Microsoft, he's finally said he's stepping down. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that it's probably a good thing for Microsoft. I mean, while he did, there was good things such as the enterprise focus, Windows 7. He's also been a bit wonky. You know his developer speech, right?
Developers. Yeah, but I got to tell you, Taylor, we were watching that in the break. And people make fun of Steve Ballmer. They call him Monkey Boy because he dances around on the stage. He says things like developers, developers, developers. I don't fault him for that at all. I think that that's if that's what people are criticizing Ballmer about, they're making a mistake. He is a salesman. That was his job at Microsoft. He was Bill Gates' roommate at Harvard, and he joined Microsoft very early on. And his chief aim was sales. And when you go on stage at a sales meeting and you jump up and down and say, "Whoa," that's fine. That's what sales meetings are all about. I don't think that's anything wrong with that. And when you emphasize that it's all about developers, 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 that's exactly right. Getting people to write software for Microsoft Windows, that's exactly right. More CEOs should have some enthusiasm. I don't have anything. I have nothing against that. There are issues with the choices he's made for the direction of Microsoft. And you're right. You know, his enterprise focus has been successful. Kind of be hard to fail when so many people use Microsoft in the enterprise. You know, he took over for Bill Gates. That's tough. Taking over for somebody like Bill Gates is a tough thing to do. But even, by the way, Bill Gates made a few mistakes. Microsoft ignored the internet until 1995, then suddenly woke up. Bill Gates wrote a very famous memo saying, you know, this internet thing we were making fun of, it's going to be big. And they went out and they bought, I think, Spyglass, and they made the Internet Explorer. I mean, they really took it seriously. And Bill Gates, to his credit, turned that company on a dime. Steve has not been able to get the same kind of success, and it's tough. But I don't fault him for being monkey boy. I think that's the best part of Steve Ballmer. We're going to miss that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt's here. He is the photo guy. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
Welcome. I'm great. Time to review our assignment. Every month, Chris will tell us a word, a topic, a thought that he wants us to go out and take fresh pictures to illustrate.
And this time around, it was wet.
Wet. Love it. We've been looking at the wet pictures. So what people do is they upload them to our Flickr group at Yahoo, flickr.com, and the group is the Tech Guy Group, and tag it with the word wet so we can see them. And there's some fun, wet pictures. But you picked three to talk about today.
Yes, I did. So the first one is by Sarah and Eric Sorlian. Sorlian.
And this is actually a very simple picture of a little girl.
It is a very simple picture with a little girl, but there's this little quirk with the background. If you look in the background, there's this spring, this kind of fountain thing, and it looks like the girl has a funny hat on or something.
Water's coming out of her head.
So it's a very good, I think it's a very good example of... watch the background. I mean, this one looks clearly like it was on purpose. So I think it was on purpose. But if it wasn't, hey, next time watch the background.
How often do we see a flag coming out of somebody's head or horns or, you know?
I do that on purpose all the time.
See, that's the difference between you and me. I do it by accident all the time. So you're looking at the person. You're not paying attention to what's behind them. And you see it on TV a lot, too, and it's one of the things that directors in television are supposed to pay attention to is what's coming out of our host's head.
But this is just so perfect. I just can't believe
Good. Yeah. That's good.
Okay.
And, yeah, she tagged it wet, so she knew water was coming out of the little girl's head. That's great.
It's wet. It's a fountain.
Here's an interesting one. It looks almost like a painting.
Yes, and it's shot through a window, maybe a car window or something, and it's called Super Wet Bokeh. So what Brendan Burkett did is he shot out of focus lights, and might be traffic lights. There's maybe not. I don't see. Maybe the colors. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. But it's colorful lights, but the focus is not on the lights. The focus is on the window. So you see the water running down the window. It's kind of a veil of water, and those lights just add this beautiful backdrop, this beautiful colorful out of focus backdrop. And it's just one of these dreamy pictures. But you get all the information you need. It's at night. It's wet. He's probably sitting in the car, so he's dry. And there's stuff happening, but it's not really important what it's about. It's just a nice, colorful backdrop.
A picture doesn't always have to be literal. This is more like an abstract.
It does tell a story, right?
Yeah. It's wet.
And it's clearly wet. Yeah.
It's clearly wet. I like it. Yeah. Finally, so, this one's from Randy Vias.
Right. And it's, titled Wet. And what we see is, this is an interesting thing because it takes you onto a bit of a visual trip, because what you first look at is most likely the bright spot in the left. There is it's a puddle. We see an upside down in the reflection, upside down forest kind of thing. And there is this bright patch of sky, presumably where the sun is coming down or where the sun is rising, and some little rings, wavy rings in the water where some water droplets hit the puddle. So that's the first thing that will catch the attention, just because it's really bright and it's on the left-hand side, and that's where we usually start looking at pictures. And then you explore the picture, and all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, there's a person standing there. So all of a sudden you see the feet of a person that's, again, in the reflection upside down, but you see the above the puddle kind of part. And it, in total, I think I like it because of the color, because of the little journey that it takes you on.
You know, one of the things you do, and all good photographers do, is you can make a snap judgment. You can look at a picture and almost immediately know if it's good or not, if you like it or not. And I think those of us who aren't pros have trouble with that. And the reason it comes up for me is I often take thousands of pictures in one day.
Right.
And I counsel people to go through those pictures every day and delete. Just get rid of a ton of stuff.
And you would have deleted this one, I guess.
No, I wouldn't have. I like it. But I'm just saying, how do you develop this ability to be ruthless with your pictures, to know and to trust your judgment, that you know this is good, this is not good? Because I look at my pictures and I don't know. I go, well, I don't know.
You know where I learned this? I learned this actually during video editing, because you shoot hours and hours of video and you end up with a short four-minute video. So you have to throw away a lot of stuff. And learning to do learning to throw away things, learning to kill your babies, that is very difficult.
How do you learn, though? How do you learn?
Well, by doing it. By doing it, by looking at other people's photography, by getting an idea of what works, what doesn't work. And it's a process that might take a few years, but you have to stick to it. It's like you have to practice, right? You can't just not. It's photography is one of these things where people think they don't have to practice.
Right, you do.
You practice for everything else. So yeah, right. If you play an instrument, you practice. So with photography, it's the same thing. Spend time with it. Make it a part. I'm making a point every day that I spend at least half an hour with photography, even if I'm doing office work at home, if I'm not out shooting.
So to that end, let's give everybody an assignment so that they can take some pictures over the next month or so.
Yes, new assignment is loud.
Loud. I loud. Like it. So the idea
is... it can be anything, right?
Yeah, we're not going to... Yeah.
It doesn't have to be visual. It can be something acoustic, but you can have loud photos, visually loud photos.
We're not going to tell you what loud means. Could be anything. You figure it out. Illustrate the word, the concept, the idea, loud... by taking a picture. Once a week, you can upload your favorite. This is going to help you practice this culling thing to our Flickr group. Flickr's free, by any way. Anybody can be a member at flickr.com. But you do have to be a member to join our tech guy group. Do join that. And then upload some loud pictures. We'll take a look at three of them. When I get back, I'm going to go on a trip. I'll be back in October, so we'll do it then. Chris Marquardt is at chrismarquardt.com if you want to find out more about his workshops where he could teach you stuff like, is this a good picture? Discover the top floor. Discover the top floor. That's the place to go for that. And each week he stops by and helps us with digital photography. It's fun. It's a great hobby, and you're right, practice. My problem is I'm afraid of deleting a good picture.
Yeah, but when it's gone, and then you won't even remember more. That you took it, you
there,
know.
There's more. I once asked a very talented National Geographic photographer who I befriended a few years ago. He said, if it doesn't hit me in the gut, I throw it out. If I don't go, ooh, I throw it out.
Yeah, and what hits you in the gut changes over time. So
sure.
You just go with your gut feel, and I think you're going to be all right.
All right, I'm going to be aggressive, because I know I'm going to come back from this trip. I'm going to the Adriatic with me. I'm really, literally, probably, I'm bringing I'm bringing camera, like four cameras, but my Canon 5D Mark II, my Olympus OMD. Guess,
you're going to use the iPhone, though.
I'll probably end up using the phone. It's not an iPhone. I don't think I'll bring an iPhone.
Oh, yeah, Android, yeah.
I'll use my HTC One probably to take half the pictures. You're right. You're right, because it's the one in your pocket. It's easy. Thank you, Chris. Chris Marquardt.
Absolutely.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris will join us next week. In fact, we're going to tape ahead a little bit, so we'll have lots of Chris. Even while I'm on vacation. More Chris than you can take. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. And by the way, we'll put all of these images, links, and everything you need to know about the contest in our website, Tech Guy Labs, techguylabs.com. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Taylor in Corona, California. Oh, no, I already did Taylor. It's Alex in Santa Monica, California. Hi, Alex. Alex?
Hello?
Nope, now it's Dave. Hey, Dave in Thousand Oaks.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Did I lose Alex? Did I do something wrong?
No, you got Dave.
I know. I think Alex hung up. Anyway, hi, Dave.
Hi. Listen, we got some serious problems. We got football season starting. We got this amazing new Pac-12 network that Verizon doesn't support. Time Warner does, but they're on strike with CBS. Is there another way to get this network without going through these cable companies?
Isn't it awful? So you want to watch NFL or you want to watch college?
Well, college first, and that starts next week. So we got the whole West Coast, UCLA, SC, Cal, Stanford, Oregon, you know, the whole thing. We can't see those games.
Isn't that frustrating?
Unless you're a Pac-12 network guy. I look, Pac-12 network doesn't even have a phone number to contact them in San Francisco. It's very frustrating.
So if you are on Verizon,
yes,
you can get it. Is that what you're saying?
No, they do not offer it.
Oh, you have to get it on DirecTV. Is that right? Where do you get it?
Maybe Direct, but and then Time Warner, yes.
Okay, Time Warner. So the whole reason, of course, they do these exclusives, and it really is terrible in college football, yeah. Is because they get more money. So I guess Dish has it, DirecTV doesn't. Time Warner has it, Verizon doesn't.
But if you get Time Warner now, you don't have CBS.
Get Time Warner, you don't have CBS. By the way, they'll resolve that before the NFL starts, I'm sure. That's where it's going to really hurt, right? Doesn't CBS have a lot of NFL games? That's going to really hurt. They have, what do they have, Thursday night? Sunday?
Yeah
that's gonna really hurt.
Well, there's a sensor you can download an app. Now, if I download an
You can't download it. Well, it says, where does it say you... On the Pac-12 website?
Yes.
They have an app.
Yes.
Well, see, this is what college is doing that's smart, is a lot of colleges... I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago. Notre Dame does this. Because boosters are a huge source of income for, you know, alumni boosters. That's why college football is big.
Sure.
So these colleges really want to support the boosters. So what Notre Dame, for instance, does is they do it on the internet. So, yeah, I'm at Pac-12.com. Watch Pac-12 videos, live Pac-12 networks. Oh, they have an Android app. Now, they may not have live streaming in the Android app. But I would bet you, just, you know, check. You can watch Pac-12 using your TV provider's login, which, of course, that won't work because your TV provider doesn't provide it.
There you go.
Or get up-to-the-minute detail. Okay, so that's the live. And they show you, by the way, a list of TV providers. Cox does it. Dish does it. Not DirecTV. Fios TV from Frontier, not Verizon. You know, it's...
crazy.
They haven't made the deals, have they?
Nope.
So
West Coast is locked out.
Yeah, you'd think the West Coast would be the number one place they'd want boosters to watch. They have iPhone and Android apps. Let's see what the iPhone and Android app does. A lot of times what they do on these is they require you to demonstrate you're paying a cable company. Access to most video content is based on getting I'm reading from the Android app.
Okay.
Access to video content is based on getting a Pac-12 Network's channel through your TV provider.
Do you go around in a circle?
Well, for instance, if you're Comcast, as I am, you're not able to log in and watch live content. You have to be Dish, Time Warner, Cox, Bright House, Bend, Canby, Crestview, Frontier, Suddenlink, etc. So, yeah, they didn't make the deals.
Yeah.
And it's dumb of them because they're going to probably forego some alumni support because they're not available for all the alums.
Right.
So there's nothing you can do. And this is the strangle. By the way, this is all going to change.
It is strangle.
It's the stranglehold that network and cable companies have on content. But yeah. If you're a smart content provider, you're kind of caught right now. You'd love to look at, believe me, Pac-12 would love to get to you. They want everybody to watch who can. In fact, they'd love to charge you directly. That's what Notre Dame does. Yeah. Hey, I'll take your $150 a season. No problem. Yeah, the problem is they do that, then the cable companies say, well, then you're not going to do a deal with us.
Jeez.
And so the cable companies still have this stranglehold, but this is ending, and they know it, by the way. They're terrified.
This does take a while, I guess.
It does. We're in a transitional period. Remember, 10 years ago, you couldn't have watched football on the internet. It wouldn't have enough bandwidth on a dial-up. It's only recently, relatively, that we have enough that it's widespread enough bandwidth to watch this stuff over the internet. You want to do something I want to do, a lot of people want to do, called cord cutting. I want to get rid of my premium cable subscriptions. I want to get rid of the satellite dish. I want high-speed internet, and that's it. And I want to get everything over the internet. I'm an internet broadcaster. I want to see these days happen soon. It's good for me as an internet broadcaster. The problem is that if you have an existing business, this is always the difficulty, and you see it a lot in digital, in all kinds of digital. If you have an existing business, you're afraid of cannibalizing your existing business. Why do you think the New York Times is having such a hard time moving to the internet? They can't kill the paper. That's why the Washington Post and the Boston Globe were fire sailed off to companies that had other interests, because it's so difficult to balance the old business model and the new. That's why Kodak went Chapter 11. It's not that Kodak didn't have a good digital strategy. They did. They couldn't make as much money out of it. They made more money on processing and film. And so when that business died, so did Kodak. So did Polaroid. So this is it's always tough. It's bad for us as consumers because we lose out, at least in the short term. But in the long run, we'll all win because you'll be able to go directly to the content creators and buy their content directly. They'd prefer that. Why do they need the middleman? They don't want the middleman. It's just that historically, the middleman was doing the delivery and they needed it. Just like you used to have a record company, because historically the record company got you in record stores. That isn't much use anymore. You don't really need a record company. And soon we won't need cable companies, and I cannot wait. Oh, I cannot wait. Those will be good days. Julian, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Leo. So I understand that you had some questions about accessibility for the blind on Android.
Yes.
I am a tech trainer. I teach blind people how to use iPhones and Android.
Oh, wonderful. Where do you do that?
I do it for myself. And if anybody would like, I can give contact information.
Fabulous.
It's my website is www.techjv.com. So it's the word tech, and then my initials, jv.com.
Now, tell me, how does Android hold up? And, you know, he wanted to be able to, for instance, scroll through his contacts by letter and hear the letters spoken out loud.
Yes. With every major update to Android, there's been great strides made in accessibility. And it's to the point now where Android accessibility is just about as good as iOS accessibility. You know, they work differently. Some of the gestures are different. But a totally blind person can be just as functional on an Android phone as they can an iPhone.
Yeah, iPhone did a great job at early on with accessibility. I was very impressed. But I do see more and more apps on Android phones. Is there a particular Android phone you'd recommend?
I always recommend the pure Google phones.
Yeah.
because they don't have those overlays on them.
Right.
They work best. For example, the interface on the Samsung phones, not the Samsung, I'm sorry, the HTC phones, gets in the way of accessibility.
And the nice thing is the Nexus 4 is inexpensive direct from Google, so just 300-some bucks, and you own it outright. Hey, thank you, Julian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo's a phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. You know what I'm going to do? I had this crazy idea. September 10th. We don't know for sure, but it's believed, because Apple hasn't sent out any information or invitations, that Apple will have an event on September 10th at which they will announce a new iPhone or two. I was thinking it'd be kind of fun to record before that event, to record a segment of the show, to be played back. You'd have to help me with this, Nathan, to be played back after the event. And then, Nathan, during that segment, I will say everything we think is true about the new iPhone. All the rumors, fingerprint reader, two phones, the 5S, the 5C, one's got color, the 5S, the high end, will be available in black and white and champagne. I'll do all of the rumors. And then, Nathan, you could have a little buzzer and a little bell. And when I get it right, you go ding-a-ding. When I get it wrong, you go eh. And we'll see, because we never really, you know, the rumor mill is so crazy. And it goes, I mean, it just goes crazy, especially as we get closer and closer to an Apple event. But we never really check back, do we, and say, how close was it? You know, how accurate were these rumors? It'd be kind of fun to really put me on the spot. And I'll tell you everything. You can play the buzzers, the sad trombone, the bells when it's right. Sometimes people do those bingo cards. You do see that sometimes. The tech sites will publish a bingo card that has all of the guesses, fingerprint reader, color backs, and you write them into each one, and then you fill out the bingo card as you watch the event. I think we might do that. That'd be kind of fun. They are supposedly, and this I find hard to believe, making a gold iPhone or champagne. Although, as I think about it, I realize, yeah, I'd buy that. So maybe that's not a bad idea. They're also thinking, I believe, of putting a fingerprint reader where the home button is. I can think of all sorts of good reasons to do that if they could make it work. And that's something I would also mention about these rumors is it may be true right now that Apple intends to put a fingerprint reader in. It may be a very accurate rumor, and I think it is. We've seen pictures of the frame and stuff, but this has happened before. If they can't get it exactly right before the launch, sometimes they just yank it. You might get the iPhone that has designed a spot for a fingerprint reader but doesn't have a fingerprint reader because they never could get it to work right or accurately or reliably or whatever. So it's completely possible that the rumor is true, both true and false. Do you care about a fingerprint reader in your phone? Maybe not right now, but this is the kind of thing Apple could make a big difference with. If it were accurate and reliable, you could use it to unlock your phone. You just put your fingerprint right on that home button. Phone unlocks. Wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't have to remember a password or whatever. And best yet, if your phone got lost or stolen, and this is becoming a real problem with iPhones, bad guy couldn't use it. Unless he took your finger at the same time, but that would be too creepy. No. See, maybe that now how much would you pay? How about this? What if, and Apple already has an application to do this, there's a wallet on your phone. Apple calls it their passport. Right now it's kind of silly. It's just got grocery coupons in it and movie tickets, airplane tickets, that kind of thing. But what if it also had credit cards? What if they decided, hey, now that we have a fingerprint reader that's reliable and accurate and secure, we could actually put money in that wallet. We could actually put credit cards and even cash into there, debit cards. And all you'd need to do is authenticate it with your thumbprint, and then you could use that phone as your wallet. Wouldn't that be interesting? One of the big issues right now with money is something called authentication. Money transfers can be secure and reliable as long as we can prove that each side of the transaction is who they say they are. If I could say, if you know for sure I'm me, and I know for sure you're you, and I know who you are, it's safe to give you money. I can track you down if you steal. Did you read the story about the woman who bought four apples? She thought they were iPhones, but they were actually just apples. If that happened, yes, she got four boxes. She'd mail ordered, and she got four boxes of delicious, crisp, juicy apples, but not the iPhone she was hoping for or paid for. But what if the authentication were in there? She knew exactly who ripped her off. Be less likely to have that happen. So I think there's some interesting plays Apple could make here. Remember, Apple is always looking. They not ideally for them, they'd like to invent a new market. Their biggest successes have been where they go into a market and they just, boom, they change everything. They changed the music industry in 2001 with the iPod. They changed the phone industry in 2007 with the iPhone. One could argue they changed the tablet industry with the iPad. There'd been tablets for a year, 10 years, decade. Microsoft had been making tablets, pushing tablets for a decade. Then all of a sudden in 2010, along comes Apple and boom, it's a market. So maybe this is another one. They're looking for stuff like that. The other rumors are strong that there'll be an iWatch at some point. That won't be this year. Don't hold out hope for that. And I'm sure we'll see new iPads, maybe even new computers and a Mac Pro. We're definitely going to see that. They've even said we're going to see that. But that won't be this September announcement. There'll be one in October. They're actually putting ads for the new Macintosh Pro in the movies. You go to see a movie. I think it was in Despicable Me 2. You go to see a movie and you see this boob. At first you think, what is this? Is this an upcoming movie about space or something? Wow, what is this, science fiction? And then you realize, no, that's a computer. There's the Apple logo. They did an ad for the new Mac Pro in a movie, you know, right before the show. Well, that's interesting. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my number. Let's get back to the phones. We've got Robert on the line from South Carolina. Hi, Robert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. It is great speaking with you. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. What can I do for
you?
Good.
Hey, you know, first of all, I want to thank you for making complicated things to where the simple man can understand. That means a great deal.
Well, that's what I hope to do, and if I'm succeeding, I'm thrilled. Thank you.
You do it well. Hey, I'm so excited. I am officially cutting the cord in September, and I need a little advice in my guest room upstairs because it's got limited need for programming. I bought a Roku device, installed that, and I love it.
Yeah, me too. I love those Rokus. Yeah.
And I got me a Netflix account, and so between that and Crackle and some of the other things, plenty of programming for upstairs. But downstairs in my main viewing area, I decided I want to go to Google TV, and I saw the little review you did on the Vizio CoStar.
Yeah.
And then I was also considering that Sony device.
Mm-hmm.
But it's $50 more.
So here's all of these things, and you could throw in Apple TV, Chromecast, WDTV. There's hundreds of these. They all have the same purpose, connecting your TV to the internet so you can get programming on the internet. In fact, most TVs that are sold today have an internet connection and smart software on it. They call them smart TVs. And they all do roughly the same thing. But no, it's funny. There's no one box that does everything. In fact, my friend Veronica Belmont crowdsourced a spreadsheet, which I think is still on Google Docs, on set-top boxes. I'll give you the short URL. Just so you can see the grid of what with different boxes can do. bit.ly/set-top. SETTOP. And she's got in here a list of all the different set-top boxes. Hundreds of them, and what they can and cannot do. When we come back, we'll talk a little more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Maybe the folks at Google could get some help here. We broke Google. I was sending you, Adam, and you'll just have to go. Was it Adam? Who was I talking to now? Did he go away? Oh, nuts. I was talking to somebody, I can't remember his name, about what set-top box to buy. And I sent you to a Google Doc that Veronica Belmont made and has now been kept up to date by the crowd and really has done a great job on all the different, you know, boxes that you can connect your TV to give your TV internet access, what services they support, and so forth and so on. It's B-I-T. Let's keep breaking Google. bit.ly/set-top. SETTOP. Yeah, I guess you can. How can we break Google? I don't understand. I guess too many of you listen to this show, and all of you went to that website, and Google just couldn't handle it. Anyway, it's a, later. Go later. We'll put a link in the show notes, techguylabs.com. You can look at it later. If you notice, there's no one thing that does everything, which is really frustrating. It'd be nice if I could say, just get a Roku box. Roku's pretty good. It does everything. YouTube's the big missing piece on Roku. But there are literally hundreds and hundreds of channels that Roku can get over the internet. Not live. Very few things do live. And that's one of the missing pieces. In fact, the missing piece for cord cutters is people who want to watch football games, the Academy Awards, that kind of thing. Super Bowl. You really need a live television access to watch those. That's going to change, too. Apple TV can do live, but only Apple gets to do it. They have an iTunes concert series they do every summer, and they stream live during it on the Apple TV. So we know it can do it, but they just don't let anybody else do it. There is a company called Aereo, A-E-R-E-O, Barry Diller. It's very interesting. Barry Diller, you may remember that name, famous Hollywood agent who's getting his revenge on Hollywood, I guess. Aereo gives people live television access over the internet. You're, in effect, renting an antenna in your town, and then like a television antenna, and then you can use that antenna to get TV on your iPad and soon other devices. It's in a very limited markets right now, but if you go to the website, you can see as they roll out. If you had Aereo and you had maybe Roku, you might need to buy a couple of them. Google TV is a little different than these others, and it's very interesting. The Xbox is going to do this too, the new Xbox One. It's a pass-through device. So it's an overlay on top of your TV. So what happens with Google TV devices, you plug your set-top box, your cable box, your satellite box into the Google TV, and then you plug your Google TV into the television set. And so you don't have to change, you know how you have to change the input setting to watch, you know, your Roku? You don't have to do that with Google TV. You're watching your cable box, you press a button, Google TV comes up and overlays the television. And it interfaces with it. So it's pretty good. It's a pretty good mix. And I do like it for that. But unfortunately, a number of companies, including Hulu, block Google TV. They don't want you. You can watch on the web. You can watch Hulu on the web. But you can't watch it on Google TV. Don't ask me why. I don't understand how these guys do business. I just don't get it. Oh, so it's Bitly. We broke Bitly. I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case because I'm on the Google site and Google says I can't reach Google.com. That's not Bitly. We broke Google, and you ought to be proud for that. Not an easy thing to do. It's pretty amazing. My recommendation probably is to get a Roku box. That's probably the best basic starting point. If you want Apple's ecosystem, if you want to use iTunes, then you probably should get an Apple TV 2. I like this new Chromecast. I think that's quite interesting. But it's very limited in its abilities right now. Don't know. I don't know what to tell you. There's no perfect solution yet. We are, again, in the transition time. Adam, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well. Leo, I'm looking for a new laptop for myself, but I want to get a Ubuntu laptop to compete with my wife's new Ubuntu laptop, and I want to know what my options are.
Well, I wouldn't get a – I did try it. You know, Dell does make – they're one of the few companies that make, and there are some others that specialize in Ubuntu laptops. I did buy Dell's Ubuntu laptop. It was overpriced. You're better off just getting a Windows laptop and then putting Ubuntu on it.
Sure. I was hoping that – and I don't know, maybe I'm incorrect in this assumption, but I was hoping that I could get a higher-end computer – with a Ubuntu laptop on it for a lesser price than I would for a...
Yeah, you'd think. There's no Microsoft tax, right?
Yeah, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft, we're not sure. They don't say how much they charge companies to put Windows on a computer, but it's not a lot. It's $30 thereabouts.
She purchased a computer maybe 6 months ago from, I don't know, maybe System 76 or some... Linux specifics in the small company
right.
out of California somewhere.
Right.
And it seems you know, like for the price, it was about $800, came relatively decked out. And I wanted to know if there were any other options out there.
I bought the Dell Ubuntu laptop, and it's funny because it still has a Windows key on the keyboard, so I know they're just repurposing their regular Windows laptop. It was not cheap. It was like $1,300.
Wow.
It was an i7. It was loaded at 8 gigs of RAM and all of that stuff. System 76, you know, does sell these. And you're not paying the Microsoft tax, so that's good. The XPS 13 I got is great in the sense that Ubuntu runs right out of the box. It's got all the right drivers. There's no configuration. And if you do it yourself, there's always a little fussing around. But if you're a good, if you understand Linux, if you're, you know, if you've used it before, it's not the end of the world. There are other companies that sell, you know, hardware. In fact, if you go to Ubuntu's certified hardware site, you can at Ubuntu, ubuntu.com, you can see a list of Lenovo, Dell, IBM, and HP laptops that are certified to run Ubuntu.
Sure. But what I'm looking for is down the road support.
And that's why you'd go to an HP or a Dell or a Lenovo. I don't know. System 76 is around now, but who knows what their long-term...
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's just you don't know. So what we're talking about, Ubuntu is a flavor of a free operating system called Linux, L-I-N-U-X. Ubuntu is probably the best known, ubuntu.com. But it's not the only one by any means. The nice thing about Linux, besides the fact that it's free, really, I don't think that's the main selling point. The main selling point is it's a very reliable, robust Unix, and it's very well supported by third parties and so forth. You can get it on, you know, from a variety of places and put it on almost any computer. So I would do that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about Linux, the Linux operating system, and the free Linux operating system. And, you know, I think it's really cool. It was written by a Finnish graduate student back in 1991. Actually, today is the 22nd anniversary of him telling the world about it. His name is Linus Torvalds, really, really sweet guy. He sent out an email in 91, which was no mean feat. It was to the comp.os.inix news group saying, "Hello, everybody out there using Minix." Minix was a very primitive teaching operating system. "I'm doing a free operating system, just a hobby, won't be big and professional like GNU, for 386 AT clones." That's how long ago this was. You know what's ironic? I was doing this show back then. "This has been brewing since April," and that's how long I've been doing this show. "It's been brewing since April and starting to get ready. I'd like any feedback on things people like or dislike in Minix, as my OS resembles it somewhat. I'm currently ported Bash," that's the command line, "and GCC," that's the C compiler, "and things seem to work. This implies I'll get something practical within a few months. Yes, it's free of any Minix code. It has a multi-threaded file system. It's not portable, and it probably never will support anything other than AT hard disks." Yeah, well, 22 years later, it actually is the most used operating system in the world. If you use an Android phone, you're using Linus Torvalds Linux. If you use the internet, 9 out of 10 servers you visit are using Linus Torvalds Linux. You use Linux every day. You bet you didn't even know it. One of the reasons it's such a success is because even though Linus kept the copyright, he still owns the word Linux, but he gave away the source code and lets other people create Linux-like software and work on it. And of course, his timing was good. His timing was excellent. The internet was just emerging, and of course, that made it possible for people all around the world to work with him, and the free software movement had just started. So it made it possible for that to happen. Really cool. Happy anniversary, Linux. And so our last caller who wanted to run Linux on a laptop, you know, most people do what I would do, which is buy a good laptop, the one you like, check it up, make sure it works with Linux, that the drivers exist for all the laptop hardware, and then download a version of Linux, whether it's Ubuntu or whatever you like, and install it. Michael, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Yeah, a little while back, you had a caller who wanted to know about some ripping software, and I'd like to give a free plug to my favorite. It's called a Magic DVD Ripper.
Magic DVD Ripper, and this is a Windows-only tool?
So far as I know, yeah.
Yeah. And is it free or is it commercial?
Well, it's a little bit of both. They give you 5 uses for free, and then they want you to buy it.
So at least you can see how it works.
Yeah. It's like, if you buy it, it's like $30, $35 or so.
MagicDVDRipper.com. Good. You've had good results.
Excellent. It goes to my videos. And
does it do, let me ask you, if it, now it copies DVDs, does it, I see they, it's a separate program for Blu-rays.
Right, that's quite new. I haven't tried it yet because I don't have a Blu-ray player.
Yeah, Blu-ray, you know, the movie industry realized what a mistake it had made with DVDs because, you know, the decryption. So DVDs are copy protected. There's anti-piracy software on all movies, all DVDs. And it was a high school student who cracked it mere months after the DVD format came out. As a result, he earned the name. His name was John Lek Johansson. He's a Norwegian feller, high school student. He won the name DVD John. He's gone on to other great and wonderful things. He's he'll be 30 years old in November. But way back when DVD John was in high school, he cracked the DVD format, and the movie industry said never again because they couldn't stop it. It was done. The copy protection was baked into the DVD format. The millions of DVD players had been sold or would be sold. And so there was just no way to back off. So with the Blu-ray, they said, we're going to fix this. And they came up with some very interesting techniques, one of which the keys can be changed. The problem with DVDs, the keys could ever be changed. The key is known now. Nothing you can do about it. And there's one key for all DVDs. So they changed that with Blu-ray. Keys can be revoked. So should something come along that can, you know, widely used to break Blu-ray DVDs, they can revoke the keys. To my knowledge, they've never revoked the keys, despite the fact that a variety of tools for ripping Blu-rays are out, sold commercially even. So good. Magic DVD Ripper. I appreciate the suggestion. Thank you, Michael. Kyle in Los Alamitos, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Kyle.
Leo.
How are ya?
I'm doing fantastic. Glad to finally talk to you.
Thanks for calling in. What can I do for you?
So I was curious on what your opinion was on these new camera lens adapters to the iPhone. It's basically a regular case you buy with the iPhone, but on the back is this large plastic adapter for an SLR lens. Yeah, pretty neat, huh?
I wouldn't recommend that. First of all, you have to carry around a lens that weighs more than your phone. I mean, if you really want to. The problem really is that the iPhone's sensor isn't, you know, that good. It's good, but it's not that good, and certainly not worth putting a really great lens in front of it. I use, and I would recommend something a little simpler called the Olloclip, OlloClip. And it just slips onto the iPhone. You have to get one for the iPhone model you have. And they, one kit, I can't remember what it is, 40 or 50 bucks, has three different kinds of lenses in it. It has a telephoto zoom lens. Oh, it's expensive. It's 70 bucks. I apologize. A telephoto zoom lens. It also has a wide angle lens and a macro, which is nice. You can zoom in on, you know, flowers and bugs. They also have I guess they don't have the zoom. They have the wide angle, the macro, and a fisheye lens. And it just slips right on the camera phone. 70 bucks. That's not a bad thing. You can get little rings that go around the camera phone lens, and they're magnets, and then you can magnetically attach other lenses. So if you have an Android camera, those are good solutions. But I don't know if I like. I think that's kind of silly to use a high quality DSLR lens with your iPhone. No, I wouldn't spend my time doing that. Steve, La Crescenta, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Steve. What can I do for you?
My question is about having collected multiple
exposures of same scenes with digital photography, the ability to rapidly flip back and forth to choose the best one to save.
Okay.
The problem comes in that sometimes there is a lag between the time the picture comes up and the time when it snaps into fine focus.
Right. And that's because to save time loading, they do a low-quality version and then go up to high-quality. What program are you using today?
Well, I'm software ignorant. I use the arrows on whatever I'm using at the time, whether it's my MacBook Pro or my iPhone or or PC.
Yeah. I mean, there are programs, Aperture, and I imagine iPhoto does this. It will give you side-by-side. iPhoto will give you a sizable grid, resizable, and you have it, by the way, if you have a Mac, a resizable grid so you could see two pictures at the same time, three at the same time. They won't be full-sized, but you can see enough to say, I like that one. I think that's probably the best way to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Last segment of the Tech Guy Show for this weekend, but I'll be back next weekend talking more tech trash. And I should remind you that if you like this kind of stuff, if you're a geek at heart, or you'd like to be, that it doesn't end here. I keep going 24/7 on the internet, twit.tv. We've got about 30 shows all about technology. I host half of them, all kinds of subjects, Mac, Windows, security. Our big news roundtables later on this afternoon. It's all at twit.tv. Back to the phones we go. Robin in San Pedro, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. I have a 2-terabyte hard drive, and I have it partitioned off into 4 sections, and I had Windows 7 installed on the C drive. And I needed some of the features that Windows XP has, so I installed Windows XP on my F drive that I titled Extra, and now it won't dual boot. It won't even see the Windows 7.
Yeah, that's how Windows works. When whatever the last version of Windows you installed is, that's the one that's going to boot. Unless you're very clever.
I wasn't.
What happens is XP, you installed it, just says, hey, I'll take it from here. What you need is a boot manager that will choose which partition to boot. As long as both are bootable, and this may have changed, by the way, when you installed XP, it may have made 7 unbootable, so you may have to go back with a partitioner and make it a bootable partition. But you can use a boot manager to choose. And there are a lot of different ones. I've in the past recommended something called GAG. It's easy to remember. But I don't know how useful it is these days, because maybe it still is. It's free. It's a GAG, GAG.sourceforge.net. In the old days, you'd put it on a floppy, and it would run, boot to the floppy, and it would run and would say, oh, I see all these different operating systems. It would then modify the boot partition. See, the way a computer works, there's a sector of the hard drive that gets loaded first, the master boot record. And it says, okay, the operating system's here, go do it. And GAG will actually modify that MBR, master boot record, to run itself. And then it'll say, I see you have 3 different operating systems. Which one would you like to run today? It even works with OS 2 and MS-DOS and all sorts of stuff. Of course, to use this now, you'd have to boot. You probably don't have a floppy drive. You'd have to put it on a CD or a USB key and boot. But GAG is free, and it works great. And the nice thing about it is it's good for somebody like you, because you can use it after the fact. You've already, you know, it's if you're doing this ahead of time, next time, you can. It's much easier to do a dual boot system if you plan it ahead of time. But GAG is nice, because it'll fix it and give you the choice. So download this. Say again?
I'm sorry. You said to go into a partition manager.
Well, try. I don't think you may not need to. First thing I would do is just, you know, get GAG, put it on a USB key, and boot it, and see what happens. It will see Windows XP and Windows 7, give you a menu, say which one would you like to start, and try it. And if everything works fine, don't worry about it. sometimes the install of XP will say, "Hey, I'm the only bootable thing here," and then you'll have to figure it out.
Okay.
But I don't think that's going to be a problem. Yeah, gag is good. I haven't. Yeah, and this fixes this problem, which is not an unusual problem. I've made many a multi-boot system and unintentionally. And this has fixed it many a time. There are other choices, quite a few, in fact. BCD edit will make a boot menu. I don't think safe mode. Will safe mode give you the choice? F8? Well, let's say, hey, I see Windows 7 and Windows XP. Which would you like? See, the problem is XP knows nothing about Windows 7. So when you installed XP, it just said, I'll take it from here. It doesn't even think Windows 7 is an installer. Is an operating system. If you had taken XP, installed it first, and then installed Windows 7, Windows 7 would have said, okay, I see XP. Do you want me to overwrite it? Or would you like a dual boot system? If you go from the older version of Windows to the newer, that works. Doesn't work the other way around because XP never heard of Windows 7. It can't see into the future, you see. It's a little bit of a flaw. Michelle in Corona, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michelle. Hello? Oh, wait a minute. Let me push the button. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
Hey. Welcome.
Thank you. Okay, my question is about regarding my SIM card for my cell phone.
Okay.
Real quick, my husband and I had cell phones together for T-Mobile, and we split up, but he kept paying for my cell phone for about a year. And all of a sudden, like a couple weeks ago, I get a message from them saying that my SIM card number had changed and call if it was incorrect. So, and I saw my service was off. So I call them, and they told me that just a few minutes ago, someone had bought or changed the SIM card and changed the number. And so I called him, and he goes, "Your phone's off." So my question is, why would he buy a new SIM card when he doesn't touch my phone, use it, but didn't turn off?
Well, he doesn't want to pay for it is why.
Well, they told me he could have shut it down for free.
Yeah, but he didn't. So not a problem. What you do is take your phone back to T-Mobile, create a new account that you're going to pay for, and they'll put a new SIM card in.
Okay, but he bought a SIM card and it still got my line. And there's
no. Well, that's an interest. Yeah, see, if it was his account, he kind of owns your number.
Exactly, and it is his account.
Yeah, so I don't know if there's anything you can do about that. You could throw yourself on the mercy of T-Mobile. I think what they would do is they'd say, "Look, you're going to have to work it out with your ex. He's got to release the number to you." So I think what you're going to have to do is just say, "Look, I got a new number," and tell friends, "Don't call that number unless you want to talk to my ex, and he's a jerk." But they will. But T-Mobile will. You know, you'll have to set up a new account. You'll be paying for it, and they'll give you a new SIM. Your phone's not broken. Your phone's fine. They just put the new number in. And I'm sorry about that, but because he owned the account, I think he can do that. You can't port a number from an account that's not yours. If it were your, but I would try. I would talk to T-Mobile, say, "Look, it's my number, my ex, blah, 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 and I want that number," and they'll tell you if they can or can't. My suspicion is because he owns the account, he owns the number, there's nothing you can do. Maybe he'll relent, say, "Honey, please, can you just let me have my number? I'll never speak to you again." Steve in Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going, man?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I listen to your show quite a bit, pretty much every weekend.
Okay.
I actually had a really quick comment where you were talking about the DVD ripping.
Yeah.
Do you remember a program called DVD Decryptor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it would
a lot of these, DVD. There was DVD Shrink, there were a lot of them, and the Motion Picture Association went after a lot of them, and many of them disappeared. Some of them, and I think DVD Decryptor is one of them, released the source code and said, "Hey, if anybody wants to keep working on this, you can."
Yeah, and that's what happened, is they actually, you can still find it online, but they stopped making new versions of it. But, I mean, you know, it'll rip the whole DVD, you know, the VOB.
Yeah.
You know,
the VOB. Much to the chagrin of the movie industry, there's nothing they can do about it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So they're mirroring it out of the UK, out of England, and so the Hollywood folks, I guess, have not yet gotten to them. But if you could find a copy of it, yeah, sure, it'll still work. Somebody in the chat room says DVD Shrink is back. So what happened is all of these programs, you know, basically did something that's a violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It's illegal to reverse engineer copy protection. That's illegal. So the motion picture industry went after them on those grounds, and most of them were put out of business or moved. So the folks, for instance, at Slysoft, who still make a DVD ripper and a Blu-ray ripper, they just moved to Trinidad and Tobago, where apparently they are beyond the reach of the long arm of the law. And then there's the French schoolboys who do Handbrake, who said, well, we won't do it, but we'll let these VLC folks do it. And there's a little of a game they're playing with the motion picture industry. I'll just say it again. If you're, one of the reasons Netflix is basically struggling is because the motion picture industry decided that people were renting DVDs, copying them, and sending them back. Did you ever do that? Yeah, that's stealing. That is definitely stealing. And so they made it harder and harder for Netflix to get DVDs, and the company had to reinvent itself. If you own a DVD, make as many copies as you want. Don't sell it. Don't put it on the lawn. You own it. You get to do that. Don't pirate. That's all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.